This is a Pinball News production.
Thank you. And good afternoon. It's your pleasure to be here. I live up in Mendocino County in town of Willits, which is about a two-hour drive north of here. I had a shop up there doing pinballs for many years and wrote a book called Pinball Machine Care and Maintenance, which answered the questions I was getting every single day of the week from people interested in pinball and people who took one home. And much of what I have to say today here will come is in more detail in the book, but I'm going to give you a lot of information that should really help you out. When my kids were young, at home we had this board game. It was a marble game. I can't quite remember the name of it, but it had a little slogan. It said, "A minute to learn and a lifetime to master." And that's how I always thought of pinball and why it was so neat, because just about anybody can figure out how to use a flipper, can have fun playing a pinball machine within the first couple games you're playing it. And right away, anybody of most any age can really enjoy pinball at that level. And then if you're really into it, every single machine starts getting a little more complicated if you study the rules and you aim for the targets. And you can spend, and a machine that you like, you can play that thing for years and years and never get tired of it, especially one that may be a little hard to beat. You keep working at it. And so for somebody interested in buying a machine, if you've never bought one before, you know, out in the hall there, there's about 400 different machines, and that's just a fraction of the number of pinball machines that have been made over the years since they invented the flipper back in the 1940s. And every one is a little different than every other one, and every one plays a little differently. And so the number one thing is, are you having fun playing it? And compare it to another game. And what I suggest people do is play it a dozen times. If it keeps getting more and more fun, you're onto something interesting. And if it's boring, you move on. People for years saying, what's a really good pinball machine? And then I look at the machines I love and nobody else wants them. And I look at the machines that are fetching a fortune because they're so popular. And that, you know, I don't understand why they're that much popular. So it's all a very personal thing. And these machines are wonderful. And because they're so different, it's sort of like you can't eat one potato chip. After a year or two, you're looking at a second pinball machine. And then it becomes a problem, which it did for me. I solved it by opening up a shop and buying them and selling them and buying them and keeping them. And but probably the most important thing besides having fun playing it is, and I go over this on the 10 tips here, is you're going to be staring at that machine for a long time. And you can see out there how many different kinds of games there are, how many different themes there are, how many different kinds of artwork. And in modern times, in the last 15 years or so, so many machines are now themed, licensed games having to do with some movie star or TV show who you may be in love with today and bored with tomorrow. So the thing is to think about something that you're going to enjoy and that your family's going to enjoy looking at for a long time. Some games are have artwork that may or may not be appropriate for kids, and some have just great artwork. It's just, it's all up to you, and that's what's kind of neat about pinball machines, is there's so many choices and there's so many options. And pinball went through two major phases of life. Before 1976 or so, all the machines were very mechanically oriented. There was no digital operation. The scoring was done on score reels that turned around, and years before that, lights that lit up to score the score. And real chimes and real bells rang when you scored, and it had a beauty to it and a charm to it that people loved. And then in this around 75, 76, they invented the digital machine, which they switched over to the scoring's done digitally. There's a lot more power, there's a lot more oomph, and as the computers got more sophisticated, there was speech and songs, and they got very elaborate in their scoring and the more options and faster. But still, both of those kinds of machines are still available. The older machines, they haven't made in 40 years. But if they're taken care of, they last forever. They're a bunch of switches and relays. And even though they can burn out, and you know, a switch is $1.50 and a relay is $8, and it's just rewiring them. The old electronic games, the ones that were made in the late 70s, unless they've been rebuilt, the electronics don't always hold up quite so well. The capacitors go, a lot of the solid-state components just stop working. So you want to make sure, of course, assuming you don't know how to fix one and don't want to fix one, that you got a game that's working good, that's playing just the way it should be, or sure seems to be. And if you're buying a machine from someone at a home who's had it in the home for years, one of the most important things for the electronic games, the digital games, is, and I always ask people that when they call to sell me a machine, is when was the last time you changed the battery or batteries? Because every digital machine on the CPU board has batteries that store, they're used for backup power to store high scores and everything. And if there are the old AA's that used to be in there, after 25 years sitting in there, they could start leaking, just like you've seen old flashlights and the old tape and the old Walkman that's ruined because those batteries leaked. Well, the same things happens to pinball machines. And so if they give you the typical answer, which is, what battery? Then you want to be sure, if you look at a machine, to just open up and look at the CPU board. It's behind the behind this back glass. There's a door that opens, and then all your boards are in there. And the biggest board, it just looks like a circuit board, is the CPU board. And somewhere on there, you'll see where the batteries are. And you just want to look and see that there's no corrosion, because if there's corrosion, it will get into the copper, and it's not fixable. It means buying a new board if it's available. So the old mechanical games didn't have any batteries, so that was never a problem for them. That's probably the biggest issue, that, and if a game isn't working perfectly, who's going to fix it? What is it going to cost? Labor rates are so different all over the place, and finding someone who might work on an old mechanical for you, sometimes it's more expensive to get it repaired than to find one that's working perfectly. And so think about that when you're buying a machine. Also, you know, these machines used to take coins, all of them. They're all commercial games. If you still want a machine to take coins, make sure that the coin mechanisms are in there. All the games have coin slots that are built into them. They're never going away, but inside of them are removable coin mechs. You can snap them in and snap them out. And if the coin mechanisms are gone, then you have to find out if you can get another one. It used to be when the route operators, the ones who put the machines out on route, sold those machines out of, they'd pull the coin mechs out because they didn't want anybody competing with them. They didn't want anybody else putting it out at the pizza parlor or the bowling alley. So that's just one thing to ask about. Coin mechs are available, but there's hundreds of different varieties. Most people don't want coins, and it's very easy to switch a game over to free play, so you never have to put coins in or stick your finger in there and try to throw that switch till it's all bent out of shape, which they all are, because that's what everybody does. So it's just one of the things to look at. The most important thing for a pinball machine really is safety, and that's because you're looking at an electrical appliance that's maybe 30, 40 years old. You know, when you buy you go to buy a toaster, it's 30, 40 years old. Think of frayed cords. You think of things that have come loose. You want to be very careful to make sure that that this machine is safe, and it's pretty easy to do. You know, if you're buying it from someone who actually repairs and sells them, they will do that for you. You'll have a new cord if it needs a new cord, but if you see the cord and it's frayed a little, or if it's a three-wire cord with the grounded and the ground, their little ground prongs broken off, then you really want to replace that cord, which is very easy to do. It just goes right into, in fact, easiest thing is to buy an extension cord and cut off one end and just put the new one in there. because you don't want that cord, you don't want any loose wires, you don't want wires hanging out. It's not really a safe thing at all. The other thing, and first of all, anytime you stick your hand inside of a pinball machine, unplug it from the wall. There's a lot of wires in there that are exposed. They're 110 volts, and you can get quite a wallop if you touch the wrong side of the transformer. And for the modern, the electronic games, they have big capacitors that store electricity in their power supply. And even after that machine's unplugged from the wall, if those capacitors aren't discharged, you don't want to touch those because they're holding electricity too. So you just want to be cautious about it. Another most important thing for your machine is to check the fuses. Every machine has anywhere from 4 to 20 fuses in it, typically 5 or 6. And if you buy it from some individual, just about every one of them is probably going to be the wrong rating. And you want to just go down to Radio Shack or a pinball supplier and get the right rated fuses, because there's a real reason they're in there. Because there's just so, well, you know what a fuse does. And so somebody's got a 5-amp circuit, they want that thing to blow if it gets above 5 amps, and the manufacturer put a 5-amp fuse in there, and the guy who blew the fuse stuck a 20-amp fuse in there because that's what he had. And all of a sudden, that circuit will allow 4 times the power to go through it before it blows, and that could burn out your machine. So you don't want a fuse that's not rated for where it says it's rated. Most of the fuse holders, they say right on them what they are, or the owner's manual or the wiring diagram also tells you the right fuses. It's really important. We've had machines come in the shop where somebody stuck a nail or some aluminum foil where the fuse was because they didn't have one. And to me, that's lunacy. They could burn the house down, you know, if they had a short. And it's very simple to make sure it's done right. All pinball machines have locks in the front door and in the back. And one of the reasons they're there, of course, was to keep people from stealing quarters. But the other reason is to keep kids and fingers out of there, because there are wires in there. And so, sure enough, you get a pinball machine home and there's no keys and you can't open it up. So the easiest thing to do is, first of all, to remember when you buy the machine is ask the owner where the keys are. And the owner's going to find it somehow and mail it to you in a week or a month. But in the meantime, you just take a drill. You can drill right through the lock. A replacement lock's only like $5 or $6. And you just put another one in. It's a straight screw-in thing. It's real easy to switch out. The only other safety measure I can tell you from firsthand experience is don't hurt your back. They're very heavy machines. The old mechanical machines, the tops unbolted and could be removed. These more modern machines, the tops fold down, and so there's a lot more weight. Definitely get help moving the thing. Definitely figure out how you're going to get it. The best thing you can do is invest $20 in a couple of high school football players to come over. And especially if you got to go up a flight of stairs, and they can work magic for you. When you bring a machine home and you found the one you love, how you set it up, there aren't too many important things, but they're extremely important. What few there are. Number one is the location. If your machine's going to be in the house with bright sunlight shining on it, the paint is going to fade from the sun, so if it has to be there, keep a blanket or something over it when you're not using it, just to keep the paint from fading. The other problem is a lot of people put pinball machines in the garage, and if a pinball machine is in an unheated area, and especially down here in the Bay Area, a moist, unheated area, if you turn that pinball machine on in before the room is heated up, the lights behind here can generate a lot of heat, and they come on strong. And the older machines, this thing is what they call a translite. It's a piece of plastic that holds up pretty good. But before about 1985, they were painted glass, silkscreen, and that paint is tortured by dramatic changes in temperature. So you want it to be a gradual warming up, so you're in a cold room, you turn on the lights, it'll crack the paint, it'll just take it right off, because that glass starts to expand. Excuse me. So it's okay to be in a cool room, but you know, and the electronics and solid state games don't like cold temperatures too much. They like room temperature. So lots of people have them in the garage, but just be careful around the paint. If need be, it's a problem. You can pull the light bulbs out from behind there. It's not as much fun to look at, but it'll protect your glass more. And if you have the older machines, excuse me, they use the little bayonet bulbs that they used right up until about 1990 or so, these tiny little bulbs. The original bulbs was bright, was very bright and very hot. It was called a number 44. And any good pinball shop will replace them with what's called a 47. Same shape, same power, same wattage, I mean same voltage, but they burn cooler and they're less likely to damage your machine. Not quite as bright, but and any all pinball shops sell these bulbs. Don't go to the auto parts store and buy them, because they're 12 volt and pinball machines run on 6 volt. They won't light up, so don't get the auto parts ones. And another important thing when you get the game home is you want that game to be level side to side. So there's 4 leg levelers that adjust up and down. You get a level, you set it here and make sure it's level, and here. Because if it's out of level, the ball rolls to the side, and you won't get a fair game going. Level top, you know, people like the back higher in the front, of course, so the ball rolls down. Some people even put little pieces of wood under the back to get it up even higher for faster play. That's not critical, that's a personal thing, but side to side you want the thing level. And really, that's about all there is to know to bring it home and set it up and start to play it. And you have any questions about any of that so far? Yes, sir.
Going to Data East Simpsons, replace some of the bulbs with a LED kit to try to help save the back glasses. Any suggestions on that stuff?
The LED lights have just started becoming available regularly. They look exactly like these. They're a lot more expensive. One of these bulbs is like 15 cents if you buy a box of them. The LEDs are a couple bucks, but they last forever. They burn cool. They're very bright. They're beautiful bulbs. For a while, the pinball machines seem to have trouble with them, so if you're going to get LED lights, check with the pinball suppliers, you know, knows what they're talking about, and are able to sell you bulbs that'll work. But it's a bit of an investment, but yeah, they're really nice to you. And also the LEDs for solid state machines, the bulbs soak a lot of power, or draw a lot of power. The LEDs don't, and that's beneficial to the power supply. So it helps the machine along. Yeah. Yes, sir.
I could just throw something in there because I do it a lot. There are now little mini LEDs that are warm white in color. And you can get those for like 69 cents from like Cointaker and such. And I actually use them in my mechanical game behind the back box of what you say, because each minis generate basically no heat. And so if I have a glass and see it all, it makes it a lot better situation. So you know, it's definitely worth trying, but his comment is correct. If you use it in things that are switched on and off by the game, then depending on how the lamps are driven by the game, you might have issues, so you ask the vendor and they'll tell you. That's all. It's worth doing.
You said a warm light LED? They have some that look like that,
yeah.
Incandescent now?
Well, they are closer. The color temperature is closer to incandescent, and when you use them, you know, it's acceptable, you know, behind that classic back.
It's got that strong blue.
Correct. I hate the blue and will not use a cool light bulb in anything that isn't Tron.
That was the biggest That was the biggest complaint on LEDs. They were just way too bright. But they played around with them, and they will be mainstream slowly but surely, and they will work out really well.
Do they make replacement LEDs with load resistors built in without, so like for the older games?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, like point takers, any of those. And then just pop it right in, and I've got them back in the games as well as the boards.
So if you have a problem with the solid, with the LED, then get them with the load resistor and solve the problem.
Right. They're built to be direct replacement for the Bayonet 4447s.
The thing is, there is a handful of businesses around the United States that specialize in doing nothing but selling pinball parts to home pinball owners. Two of them, one of them is right here in San Jose, Barry Amusement, he's here. Marco Specialties is there. He's from South Carolina, and they're a wonderful place. And there's about five or six others. And the thing is that they're really customer-centered, and they're really there knowing that you know nothing about your pinball machine. And you spend a half hour just trying to get them to understand what parts you need just by describing it. But you tell them what game you have, whether it's Attack from Mars or an old Gottlieb some from the 60s, and they will know exactly what it is that's going to work for your game, because they're not going to sell you something that won't work. In fact, there's a gentleman up in New York, Pinball Resource, a wonderful guy who will really tell you that it's not for your game. He has a personality. I love the man. I do a lot of business with him, but he'll let you know. Yeah.
You don't have any football players around to help you move a machine. What's the best way to do this? Ollies, hand carts, that's a weird little thing. I don't even.
Well, the trick I've learned for getting a machine into your vehicle and out of your vehicle, and for starters, is first of all, it really helps to have a good friend who's going to get lifetime free play on your machine. But what we do is because you can either take top off or lower it down, which will lower the height. But you never want to take a machine traveling with the legs on. Even if you got a big pickup truck and can get it up in there, it's just too wobbly. You hit the brakes and so the legs always come off for traveling. And the way you do is, the way we do it is, because I get a lot of people come to my shop in little minivans and tiny SUVs, and we get one corner of it up against near the car, we take off one leg, and everybody balances it. We slide that one corner up into the truck, and we take off the second leg, and we slide the back in, and we take the two front legs off. And that way there's almost no lifting. Coming out's the same way. We put the front legs on, third leg and fourth, and then a little bit at a time with the legs on, for people who don't have a dolly, and nobody does. You can take it, you can lean it down and send and do it a regular furniture dolly. They're meant to do that. It's muscling them. If you got to go upstairs, it really helps to have a few people. On the old mechanicals, if you really needed to lose weight, the play field itself was a plug-in unit. You could pull it out and take it separately, and it weighs a lot. That brings the weight way down, but you're always chancing damage in the components underneath, because there's dozens of switches under that play field, and all you got to do is knock one the wrong way, and that's it. The game won't play. Yeah.
When you're lifting with the furniture dolly and stuff like that, is there a certain corner edge you want to set it down on?
Well, you set it down on the back, and in fact, that's most of them have. If you come look, there's four little feet on the back, because that's how they transport them upright on the back. And so, so you put it under there, and you just get your dolly underneath with it upright, and then you can do it in there. And we've moved them that way also, but if you got to go up a flight of stairs, I know people have hired a furniture mover to come over and just get it up there for them, because you lift your back the wrong way and you won't be playing pinball or anything else for a while. So you want to be really careful with it. Yes, sir.
A group of us use the pinball skates. It doesn't help with the stairs, but if you're staying level, the pinball skates, they don't take up much room. They work on any machine. And basically, it's just two sets of, they almost look like shopping cart wheels that are connected to a bar that kind of like attach to your front legs, and then you attach another one to your back legs, and then all of a sudden your pinball's on wheels.
Uh-huh. I've seen pictures of them. I've never seen them used. We've had good luck just with a good furniture dolly, you know, with the kind that than those refrigerators. We've used that a lot, and of course every shop has the casket carrier. It's just a rolling table with a hydraulic lift on it. It slips right under the machine and lifts it up, but it's not. And of course, if it's a shop that's selling you the machine, you know, you just tell them, I ain't going to buy it unless you bring it over and set it up. And chances are they will. And in fact, a full-time shop will have trucks with the hydraulic lifts and everything. So, but most people buy a machine off somebody in a home, and they just say, get it out of here. And it's, you know, you just figure out the best way you can. But it's worth spending a few bucks to get somebody to help you for sure. There's quite a few things to look at for when you're checking out a machine and keeping it running nicely and adjusting and care for it. And it's all fairly simple to do. Some very basic things is that the playfield glass, that's this glass right here, when it came from the factories, were tempered glass, safety glass. It is a stronger glass than regular window glass in terms of taking a beating. But more important, if some kid just smashes that glass and the glass breaks, which is rare, really. It really doesn't happen. But if it does, the tempered glass shatters into a million little pieces. You can't even believe it was a glass. And you have the biggest mess in the world to clean up here and vacuum out. But somebody can't really cut themselves too very bad on that glass. Where if they had a window glass and it broke in those shards, they could do themselves damages. You know, you don't want to get your wrist around them. So all new machines come with tempered glass. And if you bought the machine from somebody's home, chances are if that glass had ever broken, they just went down to the glass shop and got a piece of window glass and stuck it in there. And it may have been in there for 15 years doing fine. But it's not really a safe alternative. The Bay Area Amusement sells replacement gas for $25. I mean, that's an amazingly good price. But you don't want to have to ship it to you because that's where it gets expensive. The only thing about these tempered glass is when you take it out, you want to be real careful because the corners, for some reason or other, are very delicate. And if you take that glass and just we did it once. We were putting a glass in a truck, and the corner hit the back, and all of a sudden, it wasn't there. I mean, it just turned into this shattered little mess, and all we did was touch it. The corners are very, very sensitive, but if 20 years of doing pinball, it's only happened once. I never let it happen again, so it's just something to be cautious of. If nobody's done anything to the machine in a bunch of years, a new set of rubber rings is magic. For about $15 and about a half hour of work, you replace all those rings, and it just brings that machine alive. Old rubber rings, they get brittle, they get stiff, and the ball doesn't really bounce off of them. And especially if you see a ring where there's some, the old ones are white, but if you see little powder below them, you know they're starting to disintegrate. And they're not dangerous by any means, but there's no life to them. And one of the magic things about these pinball suppliers is you call them up and you tell them what game you have, and they will put together a complete set of rings for you for about $15, you know, the whole set. And you just swap them out one at a time. It's very easy to slide the glass out of there. And while it's out of there, you can get some either pinball wax and cleaner or just some good furniture wax and cleaner and clean the playfield and wax it. It just it protects the paint on that playfield and makes the ball go a little faster and it makes it look a lot nicer. We recommend people do it about once a year if they play the machine a lot. I find people sometimes never do it, but it really helps a lot to do that. One of the most important things on it is the shooter tip, the little rubber tip that goes on the plunger that shoots the ball. If the edge of the top of that tip's worn out or torn off, which happens, it's just worn out, then there's a metal rod that's hitting your metal ball, and what happens is it'll nick that ball, it'll ding it, and that ball suddenly has got little notches and dings in it, and it's like rolling sandpaper on your beautiful play field. Same thing if your ball has rust spots or something on it. A new ball is only like $2 or $3, and so you don't want a ding ball or a rusty ball because it really will damage your play field. So always have a, you know, next time you're, just grab a shooter tip. They're 50 cents or something, and have an extra one around. But it's really a good, it's not a good idea to play pinball with a missing or damaged shooter tip, just because in the long run it's really going to hurt your machine. Another thing about the machine, you know, all pinball machines have a tilt. I guess you all know what the tilt is. You push that machine too hard and it tilts. And what's going on in almost every single pinball machine is inside the cabinet, almost always located on this wall right here and accessible from the door, is a little swinging piece of wire, usually with a plumb bob attached to it. And it goes through, I'm sorry I didn't bring one, but it goes through a metal hoop. And that wire sits in the middle of that hoop. And if you kick it enough, the wire starts running. And if it touches the ring, it's a metal ring, it makes contact and it tilts. So when you want to think about, first of all, when you bring the machine home, once you've got your machine level, you want to look in there with a flashlight. It's real easy to get in there. And make sure the metal rod is dead center in that hole. You don't want it to be off to the side a little bit or one way or another. And the metal ring is attached with two screws that are, it can slide, you can loosen those screws and slide that ring around just a little bit so you can adjust it. It's a real simple adjustment, because if the metal rod is too close to one side, it's going to tilt very easily. A lot of people, what they do is they take a bunch of tissue paper and shove it all around the rod, and so it won't tilt at all. And then they can bang living blazes out of it. Because it does come with an adjustable plumb bob. Is there a place to draw a picture? I guess not. Well, the plumb bob is at an angle, and so the higher up on the metal rod, the closer it is to that ring, and the more likely it is to tilt. And the lower on the rod, the further it is from the ring, so it's less likely to tilt. So, and it has a little adjustment screw. It goes up or down. It takes a second. And so you can play with that or take the plumb bob off completely, and the ring doesn't swing that much. Most people really like to have a game they can push around a little bit. It really is part of playing pinball. And there are some shots on pinball machines and some machines that just require you, when the ball comes, go like that, and the ball stays in play. And they're a lot of fun. And so you don't want that tilt to tilt too easily, because it's just no fun that way. And I'll quickly draw you a tilt plumb bob here for you. I have a million illustrations in my book, and I didn't draw any of them. So they're good. I'm not a very good illustrator, but yes?
I've noticed different styles of, like, nudging the machine and stuff like that. I've seen one guy that's, like, do a swooping nudge this way and a swooping nudge this way, and the thing wouldn't tilt on. But me, if I'm, like, sort of slapping the buttons just a little bit too hard, the thing will tilt on me. Is there, like...
Well, if it's doing that, it's like what we were talking about. The tilt is too finely adjusted. The plumb bob is up too high in the ring, which I'm going to draw for you in a second. Or it's out of level. The way it works is you have this rod, and if you can picture it, there's this ring. And the ring is... And so, you know, it goes behind the rod. And if that rod swings this way or that way and touches the ring, if you're looking from the top, there's the rod and there's the ring, and it'll swing. But at the bottom of the rod, they have this metal thing called a plumb bob, and it has a screw attached to it, so you can slide it up or down. So if it's down here, it's a long way from the ring, but if it's, let's see here, I'm just a great illustrator. But if it's way up on the ring, because it's been moved up, all of a sudden there's a lot less clearance. You follow me? Does that make sense? And so therefore it tilts a lot easier. So I always take the plumb bobs off. I just put them down at the bottom of the game so people can have them because they're part of the game. But I like a lot of pushing the game around. As far as the different body English, I don't know where those people, it's their own idea what to do. But there are people who think you shouldn't shake it at all, and there's people who just shake the blazes out of it. It was there partly to keep people from beating up the machine, you know. It was invented, Mr. Williams of the Williams Pinball Company invented the tilt, and it worked like a charm. And so there's also the machines, by the way, nobody knows much about it, but there's a rolling tilt right along here. There's a little rack, and there's a ball at the bottom end, and if somebody is brilliant enough to pick up the machine to try to play the ball starts rolling down the track and will tilt the game. And of course, all games also have what they call the cheat switches or the anti-cheat switches, which are tilt switches mounted here and there on the cabinet for people who are really slamming the cabinet, trying to break in, just trying to beat it up. If they hit that cabinet too hard and on the door, they shut the whole machine down. It's just, who's ever doing it, they don't want them to be there. You rarely ever have a problem with those switches. But when a machine is not working right, especially an old mechanical machine, or if it won't start, there's a very good chance one of those tilt switches is in the wrong position. It's closed when it ought to be open, or open when it ought to be closed. That's a little more than I want to get into today, but that's the first one of the first places to look inside the machine. Yes, you had a question.
This kind of goes back to before you started with the tilt. How do you get the glass off?
Good question, because that's one of my favorites. The way to get the glass off, I don't know if I can open this one, but you open up the coin door, and right underneath here is a lever, underneath this thing inside, and you pull that lever, and we hope they don't call me a liar here and not have one. All right. Anyway, there's a very obvious lever. It pulls down this way or pulls down this way. When it does that, it releases this bar, the lockdown bar. And the lockdown bar lifts right off, and then the glass just slides right out. Except when it doesn't, because that machine has been in some bar or bowling alley for so many years, and there's so much beer and soda pop that's been spilled along the edges that it's been glued. But let me tell you, if they won't slide out, there is about an eighth of an inch of give. And you just keep at it, and I guarantee sooner or later the glass will come out. It may take you a half hour the first time, but the wise person then cleans the glass and maybe cleans out the grooves so next time it slides right out. And that's how you get access to the play field.
Is that all you have to do to be able to change the rubber?
Yes, that's normally all you have to do. The newest games have so many levels of ramps and levels that sometimes you have to disassemble half those ramps just to get to the rubber rings. A lot of rubber rings you can just flip on and flip off. It just depends on how they're mounted. It's very obvious. But some will require you to unscrew some of the pylons that hold them in place. But you just look at it and you see exactly what needs to be done. Some people take them all off and then try to remember where they go. Some people just do one at a time. If you're a little confused, you can draw a little diagram of which way the rubber goes. But usually just switching out one at a time is a good idea because you can remember how that one went on rather than having 10 of them and the phone rings and then you aren't quite sure where you were. So it's real simple. It really makes a huge difference to do that. Yes, sir?
Can you find manuals for most of those games?
You can find manuals for almost every game there is. If you're lucky, the person selling it to you will have the manual. All machines from the beginning time came with the wiring. Well, not from the beginning time, but since Flipper Games came with a wiring diagram, a schematic. And then around 1960 or so, they started adding an owner's manual. So there was two. There was a whole owner's manual and a schematic. And then when they went to the solid state games, they were both combined in the same book. And you'd like to get both of those. If it didn't come with the machine, any one of the major suppliers will sell you, usually has, well, actually, let me back up. Things have changed a little since the pinball companies, which are all out of business, discovered that they own the copyrights to these things, and they started enforcing them. And so now the Pinball Resource up in New York State has a license to reprint a lot of these old manuals. But a lot of pinball dealers have collections of originals, just boxes and boxes of them, and they can resell all the originals. But you can get an original, which is really neat, or you get a copy, and you might pay about $30 for it, but it's essential to have it. If the seller doesn't have it, it's a good negotiating point when you're trying to figure out how much you can get, have to pay for that pinball machine. And that leads me to the fact that the question, my phone rings every day with the same question: what's this pinball machine worth? That's the question more people want to know, and they start describing it to me a little bit. My only real answer is asking what a pinball machine is worth is kind of like asking what a used car is worth. There's that many factors, and I guess the bottom line, it's worth what the buyer will pay for it. And I don't mean to be facetious, but the point is that a lot of people who are selling pinball machines either gotta or want to be rid of them out of the house. The kids have grown up, or they played it for 10 years and don't want it anymore. Or the spouse wants a washer and a dryer exactly where the pinball machine is sitting, which is a sad situation that I've found myself in a few times. And so they have no idea what it's worth. And so quite often it's almost a giveaway, pick one up for $50 or so because they have to be rid of it. But the problem is you don't know what you're getting. It may still be a really fine machine, but if it needs work again, finding someone to work on it is worth looking into it. The major factor in determining the value of a machine, really, besides it's what you want, is the cosmetics. The way it looks are the most important. Any pinball machine, almost any pinball machine, can be repaired. But the biggest issue is the back glass. Like I said, before they went to these plastic translates, which are just thin plastic, that paint may have faded, it may have peeled, it may have bubbled off, it may be beautiful. So the condition, because it's very difficult to touch up a back glass, to find a replacement, they're hard to find, and people charge a fortune for them, if you can find one. So that's a major key. Is this a nice looking back glass in good condition? Is the paint bubbling off? Because once it starts going, there's no stopping it. Number two is the condition of the play field. Is all the paint still there? Is it peeled away? Is it look beat up? Is it a nice looking play field? You'll find lots of play fields with a little bit of missing paint. You'll find some with a whole lot of missing paint. And the nicer it looks, the more valuable it is. And the same with the cabinets, although they seem to be less important to people. Are they clean? Are they all scratched up with high school initials? Are they faded or peeling? And that will affect dramatically the price of a machine. A machine that I can sell in my shop for $1,000 with a bad back glass will go for $400. Even though it's a perfectly playing machine, because nobody wants to buy it. Oh, so I don't buy those machines. But the thing is, that will bring the price down significantly. And that's also, it's your consideration. Do you want something that just doesn't look that nice. But you can find beautiful, beautiful, well-maintained machines in somebody's garage or barn or storage unit for $100. They just want to be rid of it. I still find them all the time. They're out there, and they're just about everywhere. Yes, sir.
Besides Craigslist and stuff like that, what's your favorite way to go hunting for machines?
We hit all the garage sales and ask them if they got a pinball machine or not. But, well, for me, it's not a good thing because they know my shop and they call me. But I used to run ads in the little classified newspapers, wanted old pinball machine. And I tell you, the phone just rang. And our shop has seen several eBay specials come in. So I've bought a lot of things and sold a lot of things on eBay. I'm not critical, but to buy a pinball machine and have it shipped to you without looking at it first has been not a satisfactory experience for just about anybody other than people that know how to work on them and are prepared for it. You can't believe the machines that have come into the shop. A guy bought it off eBay. He really loved this machine, and he said the guy said it was working fine, but it wouldn't work for him. And we opened it up, and there was a burned coil and two missing fuses and a broken part on the play field. I said, there's no way in the world this game would even turn on, let alone working fine. And we fixed it for him, you know. And they can get damaged in transit. It's rough. So Craigslist's a lot better because you can go, you know, look at the machine, you know. You can go see what it looks like. And but I really, unless you're buying a machine, some machine you really got to have because it's a special machine, you played it in high school or something, and you're buying it from somebody you trust and you can get it shipped, you know, then something to consider. But sight unseen is rarely a good idea. Yes?
On that note, do you have a list of reputable dealers in the Bay Area? I'm particularly interested in South Bay.
You know, I don't, because there's so many. I know the parts dealers, you know, but the ones who actually buy and sell machines, I would suggest for the South Bay, you talk to Rick at Barry Amusement here. They're based in San Jose, and he'll know. He's there at the show this weekend. But I would say anybody who's been doing it for a while, you know, they do it for the love of it. There isn't a whole lot of money in buying and selling pinballs, and it's a lot of work. So I'd find somebody who's been doing it a while and it has a guarantee for you. That wouldn't hurt any, a 30-day guarantee, help you fix it up. When it comes to working on your own machine, fixing it, some people really love it. Some people don't want to touch it. For the electronic games, you really need to know a lot of solid-state technology. The old mechanical games, which are all moving parts, and you can sit there and look at it, and you can watch switches open and close, and relays open and close or not, and it's a very visual thing. And if you take your time, you can actually start figuring things out. And if you're not afraid of a soldering gun, you can make minor repairs. And what's neat about the old mechanicals is you can rarely damage them, really. You can burn out a part or something, but you can rarely start a chain reaction that you wish you never got near it, because they're very bulletproof. Electronic games, like all electronic equipment, are very delicate. You really, the voltages are critical. And it's really something for someone who knows solid-state electronics. What the home people do all the time is these guys, they got six and seven machines, they just start swapping boards out and seeing they're same manufacturer, similar age, and they just put one out of one machine and stick it into the other machine and see if it'll work. And quite often it does, sort of. And then all of a sudden you find that there's one part that isn't working anymore. And that's because it was not on the new board. But that's, you know, and boards, people, you can, if boards burn out on new games, you can replace them. They're just plugged in and out, and they sell replacement boards for almost all the machines. But you have to have some sense of what you're doing. Not too great a challenge. But for just someone at home who wants to take care of a machine. There's one thing everybody ought to know about. It's the one magical thing that everybody's interested in, and that's the flippers. Because everybody wants hot flippers. Everybody wants them to work good and to be powerful. And you've probably played a couple machines out there, I have, where the flippers just went, and you're going, and I'm going, where's the key? Let me in here. Because it is such a, for most machines, this is something you can do yourself very easily, because there's only a couple little things that's go on, and I brought you a flipper to show you. The very brand new machines have eliminated all this, but right up until recently, the flipper mechanism, there's a button on the side of the machine that activates the flipper coil, and the flipper goes. Now, it's a very powerful coil, and what happened is people got in the habit of holding the flippers in so they can catch the ball and all, and that coil would burn out because it was too hot. So very, very early on in the invention of pinball, they invented a two-part coil for all flippers. So when you hit the ball, it's a powerful coil. And as soon as that flipper comes around to the very top of its cycle, if you'll look inside your pinball machine, I don't know how far you can see, until the last couple of years anyway, every flipper had a little switch. It's called an end of stroke switch. And what happens is when that flipper comes to the top, there's a little notch here that opens that switch right at the top. And what that switch does is it switches that coil to lower power, lower heat, and won't burn out the coil. But it's a very low power coil at that point, but it doesn't matter at that point because you've already hit the ball. The problem is when that switch gets a little dirty or a little out of adjustment, all of a sudden you're not making good contact when it's closed and the flipper is weaker. It's called an end of stroke switch because it's supposed to open at the end of the stroke. So what we do on every machine and what I do on all my own machines every few months is I just open it up. And by the way, once you get the back, once you get the playfield glass off, the playfield will lift up. The new machines actually have a pivot on them, and the old ones they just lift up from the back. And there's a brace that braces it up, and you can see the underneath of the flippers. You can see very clearly the switch. And so what you want to do is just, if it's an old mechanical game, you want to get one of these little flex files or a fingernail file, and you just put it in that switch and you just clean it. Just stick it between the two little, just like that. And you want to make sure it's adjusted right so it doesn't open until the end of the, and that's just by taking the little things and bending them a little this way or that way. So it opens at the very end of the stroke, so you get as much power as you can. And let me tell you, the first time you do it, it'll take you 20 minutes, the second time it'll take you 3 minutes, but it works magic. It really makes those flippers come alive again. Every time I go on a service call, no matter what the problem is, before I leave, I take a look at the flippers and I adjust those switches for them. And it's a really nice thing. The old mechanical games from before 75 or so had weaker flippers and bumpers because it was a different electrical system. They were on straight AC power, and all the electronic games and the later mechanical games, the DC power. They put what they call a bridge rectifier on it and converted those flippers and bumpers to DC, and just they became very powerful. And that's a very easy thing to do with a little bit of, you can get a little bridge rectifier from Radio Shack, about $2. If you're any good at wiring, you can wire it in. If you have my book, there's detailed wiring instructions, and if you don't want my book, you can find it somewhere on the internet. And that can bring them alive. But you always want to be careful with very old machines when you're trying to heat them up because there's brittle old plastic, and you don't want those old targets to break in half because that's really sad. And I've done it, and I've regretted it. But you just be real careful and you play around with it. And always remember, it's just a pinball machine. It isn't your car stuck out on a back road with not starting, and you got to get home. It's a relaxing kind of thing to work on, because no matter what happens, it's still just a game, and it's not life-threatening whatsoever, which makes it a lot more fun to work on. And that's how I got started. I brought a machine. I got this idea in my head that we ought to have a pinball machine. I had young girls at the time. My wife thought I was nuts. But all of a sudden, they all fell in love with it. You know, I brought it home, and they realized the eye-hand coordination, it's physics and gravity and the laws of, and you against the machine, and you never know what that ball's going to do. And it really gave, the kids really liked it a lot. In fact, my kids were in high school. Every lunch I had to get out of there because we had six or eight kids in there playing pinball. And then, so it's a real nice thing to keep it going and to keep it going strong. And what happened with me was when it finally broke, there was nobody to fix it. And I did have a background in electronics a little bit, so I just stuck my nose in there, and 6 months later I had it fixed. and bothered a lot of people who were in the business over the phone. Really, you idiot, but it would help me anyway. And then that turned into a business, and that's why I'm here right now. So do y'all have any questions? My first machine was actually a 70s game called... Well, actually, when I was in high school, I found somebody throwing a pinball machine out, and it was an old wood rail something. I don't remember. And I told my brother he could have 25 free games if he helped me haul it home. And he's never spoken to me since, but we hauled that thing home, and we couldn't get it fixed. But I bought a game called Flip Flop, which is I still have that machine. I never sold it. It's a Bally machine from the 70s. And I fell in love with it. And then I live up in the country, and then some old guy had three of them in his barn, and I bought all three of them, and none of them were working. And slowly but surely figured out how to do it. And then for the last 15 or 18 years, I had a full-blown shop in Willis buying and selling them and repairing them. We're trying to cut back a little now. It's a lot of work fixing those machines. And you get attached to them, and then you don't want to sell them. And so... I had this, doesn't have anything to do with anything, but one of my all-time favorite games was an electronic game called Jokers, a Williams game. It's the only one I really loved, and I had it in the shop, and I put a $3,500 price tag on it because it made all the other machines look like a bargain, and some guy walked in the shop and said, "I'll buy it." And I sort of said, "No." But I didn't, because that was a lot of money and paid a lot of rent. And I spent 4 years trying to find another one, which I finally did. So,
how much did you have to pay for the replacement?
$400. But it needed a lot of work. It isn't the money, you know. We buy machines very cheap, but we put 40 hours into getting them running. But it's fun. I prefer working on them and playing them. I really enjoy doing it. And then what happened was I've made my living at writing how-to tech books and business books for years. And so I sat down and wrote the pinball book. It took about a year to write it. And Arnold Lark published it. And we've gone through 15 printings of it now. And people seem to like it a lot. And the brand new second edition, which is 50% more stuff, just came out. I just brought that out a few months ago. And we're into the second printing of that book. So... it's got a lot of basic stuff. You're welcome to buy a copy if you like. Be happy. Otherwise, I'd be happy to answer any questions for free. You can come get my card. You can call me up anytime. I love talking pinball. Any other questions? Well, I'll stay. I think my time's up, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I will stay for as long as you have any questions, and I'll be over in the shop. And I sure thank you all for coming.